that the Speaker of the House, one of the most powerful positions in the House of Commons, has himself said he thinks it's absolutely inappropriate that if Donald Trump comes on a state visit, that he should be allowed the honour of speaking in Parliament to our Parliament, both the House of Commons and House of Lords. This is an incredible rejection of Donald Trump and his agenda, and we heard it last night and we heard it from right across the political spectrum, and it's really now up to the government to listen to those voices, because we have been here in the past where, of course, we have had a Prime Minister who has been willing to accept an American agenda, and that led us into a really disastrous war. 2 million people marched on the street. And of course, that Prime Minister's reputation is in tatters now. And I think there's a stark warning to Theresa May that cozying up to Donald Trump could end up with her and her reputation being in similar tatters.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us, Asad Raymond, spokesperson for Friends of the Earth International. That does it for our show. Belated happy birthday to Neil Shabata. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Nermeen Sheikh, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener, Nardina Guzder, Sam Malkoff, Robbie Karen, Hani Massoud, Shereen Ndura, and Andre Lewis. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 8 o'clock. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the August Wilson Monologue Competition Regional Finals on Monday, February 25th at 7 p.m. at the Newmark Theater in Portland. 12 Portland area high school students will perform monologues from August Wilson 10-play American Century Cycle, and two will be selected to go to the national competition. There will also be a DJ spinning blues, jazz, R&B, and hip-hop. Again, that's the August Wilson Monologue Competition Regional Finals on Monday, February 25th at 7 p.m. at the Newmark Theater, 1111 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of Stand Together, a day of action workshops Saturday, February 25th, 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Stand Together is a day of workshops for people new to social and political action and for those upgrading their skills. Sessions include digital security, photography for action, strategic planning, nonviolent direct action, legal basics, know your rights, and more. Again, that's Stand Together, a day of action workshop, Saturday, February 25th, 9:30 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the First Unitary Church, 1211 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from ADX, a collaborative hub offering access to shared wood, metal, screen printing, jewelry, and digital design shops through a monthly membership program. The ADX Makerspace, Learning Center, and Fabrication Shop allows people to bring their ideas to life. Open every day at 417 Southeast 11th in Portland and at adxportland.com.
Good morning.
Democracy is coming to the USA.
Well, not just yet.
little by little, we are discovering what it means to live in Donald Trump's America. We are discovering drip by drip what the new normal is.
Right.
And part of that new normal is that they're grabbing people off the streets.
Well, at least they're not. Never mind. Alternate reality has become reality. And I'm beginning to realize that there always, this is not a new thing. There always have been communities in large numbers of people, usually branded by their employment, that is by their position in society, who believe very different things than other people. It's not a surprise to most people that there are large numbers of people who actually believe that there is a guy who floats above us in an ethereal realm, who not only is a guy, but became another guy who came down to earth and preached good stuff and died.
I can't take you anywhere, dude. Like less than 5 minutes in and you're already completely off the rails.
No, I'm not off the rails. I'm trying to make a very major point.
Okay.
Which is...
Because you've lost me so far.
Sorry.
All right.
It's really important to understand that people do not believe science. They do not believe a rational discourse is possible. They believe an alternate reality that is so encompassing that they cannot even comprehend a traditional modern scientific viewpoint of the universe, let alone of politics.
Okay.
That's the problem in a nutshell. I'm not looking now at the problems of class. I'm looking at the problems of education and tradition and the way in which this country was settled and who settled it and what they believe, still believe. So that's why I'm saying that. It's really important to know. And it's also important to know that this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial in Portland, Oregon. That's Abe. I'm Joe. We're now arguing about very important philosophical stuff. And it's important for you to call us. I am particularly interested in hearing from people who are not regular callers. And I am also extremely interested in encouraging a female audience. But that's my trip. 231-8187.
Okay, that was lovely. Yes, we've established that there's
I'm glad you recognized that it was lovely. I appreciate that.
Okay, we've established that there's a segment of the populace that has a dubious relationship with reality.
Maybe we're the segment.
Maybe. I tend to think we have a better, more working, more business-like relationship with reality than some do. But today we're talking about the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Department.
I've not forgotten.
And the recent round of raids that have been conducted. You said in the midst of your diatribe that this is nothing new. This is true. President Obama made a name for himself as a guy who deported a lot of people.
Yeah.
Far more than his predecessors did.
Yeah.
And I think he rightfully came under criticism from the left for this.
Yes.
But even that said, the character of the raids under President Trump, as well as the people that the raids are sweeping up, have qualitatively and quantitatively changed from the doctrine that was placed under President Obama. Now, what do I mean by that? President Obama's deportations overwhelmingly targeted people who first were here without documentation in the country and who had committed crimes. Towards the end of his administration, a given raid would take into custody, X number of people. And of those number of people, about 90% of them had a criminal record in the United States. Already under President Trump, of the 678 people rounded up last week in 12 states, only 74% had been convicted of a crime. So ICE is casting a wider net in their raids. This is because a new broadened definition of who constitutes an appropriate suspect that was cooked up by Trump and spelled out in his immigration executive order in January or early February. So we know at least one DACA protected person, one dreamer so far, at least one that we know of, has been swept up in these raids. So these are seemingly indiscriminate snatch and grab operations that are literally pulling people off the streets of the United States. We don't know a whole lot about what happens to these people after they go into ICE custody. We have a list. ICE even provides it, a list and a map of their detention facilities around the country. As you might expect, these tend to be concentrated toward the southern border. But once somebody goes into one of these detention facilities, we don't know a whole lot after that.
That's ahead. True. No, it's really important to understand the economic forces driving this whole process, one of which is the fact that these prisons, detention centers, are in fact private, largely. And they are, in fact, a profit-making business. And the
Do you know that for a fact?
Yes.
That the detention centers operated by ICE...
Yes.
Are privately
Well,
run.
They're not operated by ICE. Let's be clear
okay.
about it.
Utilized by ICE.
Utilized.
Okay.
ICE has a contract with each of these individual companies, and there are several companies involved, and a couple of them are very large. The important point to understand here is in order to have an effective, effective is not a positive word in this case, but in order to have an effective system to deport people, and there has to be a detention center. And in order to have a detention center, somebody's got to run that prison. And the people running those prisons in the United States, just as is more and more the case with regular prisons, are private operators. And when you're a private operator seeking to make a profit in that business, you cut corners. Fewer doctors, fewer worse food, bad situations, harsher employment situations for the workers who in turn... beat down the should we call them the client population?
Okay, now, President Obama, by executive order, ended the use of private prisons by the federal government. So are you certain when you say that ICE's facilities are not run by the federal government?
I think I am,
okay.
Yes. Oh, and I say I think
I want to
I
be
am,
accurate.
Because, well, it's
I'm
important
gonna have
to understand.
Go find out now.
You're going to get to go online and find out. That'll quickly answer the question you asked me, but that is my understanding.
Okay.
Secondly, and this is also important, what Obama is doing in these roundups is very different from what has been done in the past, which I am also critical of. It's important, though, to understand that this is the only precedent for this that is significant in my mind is the behavior of the Nazis in Germany, who began the horror of the Holocaust not by killing people right off the bat, although the earliest killings were done on people who were said to be inadequate intellectually. The fact of the matter is that people were snatched up and disappeared. And at first they were just held. Sometimes they could be bought out. I know of several people who live in the United States now, recently one who died, very nice people whose families had enough money to bail them out of Germany and save their lives. And of course, in that process, we have to remember that Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who was not a great friend of the Jewish people, refused to allow any significant number of Jews in. And one of his arguments was, well, how do we tell? And this is really relevant to right now. How do we tell if these guys and gals are really victims of the Nazis or are agents of the Nazis? That's really true, and that's absolutely, absolutely typical of what's going on right now. The rationales are very much the same.
I believe we have a caller.
Okay.
Who's up? Larry, good morning.
Hey, good morning, fellas. this is an overview, but, you know, 10 years ago, I had a boss, and we were having an argument or a discussion about factual placement of machinery in a factory, and we couldn't agree. And the guy finally said to me, if I believe it, it's true. And I think that everything we do now is we're dealing with people that don't need facts, that don't want to know facts and really don't care about facts. And whenever we approach these kinds of people with facts, it doesn't have any meaning anymore. I think we're beyond empirical evidence because there's so many of us that are just based everything we do on our belief. And that's all I got to say.
Yeah, and I thank you because it ties in nicely with my argument over the fact that there's a significant population of Americans and other people elsewhere that absolutely believe in a supernatural causation of history, supernatural causation of the existence of the universe itself. And I think that that's kind of just ignorant. Anyway, I throw that out there just so I can get in a fight with Christians, I suppose, and Muslims and Jews and Buddhists and anybody else.
All right, turns out you're correct.
Well, thank God.
Most of ICE's at least 9 of its 10 largest immigrant detention facilities are operated by private companies.
Yes.
The whole system is not, but it looks like a significant portion, according to the Los Angeles Times, is. I don't know the extent to which that permeates the entire system.
But here's the point about that. If you're, if you make a contract, which many of these contracts are of this nature, to put X number of people in Y number of slots in a prison, you are motivated just by that fact to pick up people. People who are marginally, maybe people who could be deported, or maybe they're not, or maybe they are. Yeah. It pays off.
Yeah, there's an incentive to simply grab people.
But I do want to talk very briefly about one other thing relating to ICE. When I was a kid, I lived in various parts of Southern California, towns most people probably have never heard of, Fallbrook, Escondido, Temecula, but also San Diego. And there was a place on the old Highway 395, which later became I-15, where always, and there was a similar place on Highway 101 going up to L.A., where always people who looked Hispanic were stopped and questioned, and some were taken away. So frequently there were people dashing with their children across the highway to get away from these ICE people because they didn't have the intelligence, not intellectual, but the awareness of where ICE would be. ICE was not called ICE then. It was the Border Patrol. And I remember very distinctly my outrage at the whole thing. I was just a kid. And at one point, I screamed out the rear window of my parents' car, yelling some nastiness at the Border Patrol. My parents were shocked and startled. And though their politics were reasonably left, they thought that my behavior was irresponsible, which it probably was. I was a teenage boy. Teenage boys are often irresponsible. But no. that was my learning. That was my putting into action active behavior toward them. So already at that point in my life, I had figured out, or somebody had taught me, that the whole border repression program of that time was a severe repression.
Hmm.
Anyway.
So not a whole lot has changed in your estimation.
Well, no, that's not my point. What has changed is the avowed intention of this presidency to label a large number of people based largely on their ethnicity, because that's what it's really about, and deport those ethnically, quote-unquote, different people, darker-skinned people who maybe had as a first language Spanish.
Let's go to the phones. Brian, good morning.
Hi. Is it me?
Yeah, you.
It's you.
Okay.
Don't say anything nasty.
Yeah, I just wanted to make the comment that I think we've been given a blessing in Trump in that he is doing these things that are actually just extensions of the same old things, and he's incapable of making beautiful speeches to make us feel like we're taken care of and that everything's okay. So I think that's there's a young man that lives just a few blocks from where Michael Brown was killed in Ferguson, and he calls himself Prince, and then capital E, capital A on YouTube, and he does a really nice little presentation about why he's glad that Trump won, you know, and it's kind of sort of tongue-in-cheek, but not really. So anyway, that was my comment, and this the way he is conducting these raids and deportations is so out there and out front and in your face, and he doesn't have any nice words to cover it up. So that's kind of a blessing.
Oh, well, that's interesting. You mean just lay it out there and then let people realize what exactly it is? Is that the argument?
Yeah, rather than what Obama did was, you know, the way he treated whistleblowers and the way he treated immigrants was maybe not this far down the road, but he was able to make us feel like everything's okay because he made wonderful speeches, and I think that was a real disservice to the whole concept of hope.
Well, that's interesting.
People
and
people need this ugliness to get activated. I thought that the Bush administration would do it, but that wasn't bad enough. We had to take it another level to get people to get off their butts.
I see. All right. Thanks a lot for the call.
So it is true that Trump received a not insignificant level of campaign support from the private prison industry.
Aha! Uh-huh. Yeah. Oh-ho!
In fact, Mother Jones reports And I'll quote from the article, it's unusual for a publicly traded corporation to donate to a super PAC. But in August, private prison company GEO Group steered $150,000 to Rebuild America Now, which is a pro-Donald Trump super PAC. So
I'm right.
Yes, he is.
Well, less important that I'm right than that it is a fact.
And, indeed.
And establishable.
Yeah, that the Trump, to a certain extent, will dance to the tune called by the private for-profit prison industry. Only now, it's got a brand new racist nationalist component.
Right, and this is worldwide, yes. This racist nationalist component. In countries all over Western Europe, and in places like, of all places, Burma, we see distinctions, and in the Middle East, we see distinctions disallowing people as to be citizens based on their religion, their ethnicity, their traditional lifestyles, and so on. And this is very popular. It is not quite universal, but very popular.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We got John.
Hi, good morning, gentlemen. Hey, Joe, I'd like to address you. You are obviously an atheist, and you were quite...
Oh, no, well, I can't be an atheist because I can't prove or not prove there's a God.
Okay, so you're an agnostic?
No, I'm kind of just a jerk.
Okay, part of the thing about this show and my hope for this show is to be able to talk with people with whom we disagree in order to be able to come to a considered consensus.
Wait a minute, you're arguing that... Well, two things. It's always good. Okay, but let me make sure.
You started out bomb throwing, okay? So let's consider, I don't think like I'm in opposition to you, but I wish that you would actually, I've called in several times before, and one of the lines that I cite from that W.B. Yeats poem repeatedly mm-hmm. is that the worst are filled with passionate intensity. And on all sides, what I see is people yelling and insulting each other rather than they're trying to find a way to actually communicate with each other. So you started out bomb throwing. And so consider this. Human beings, from an evolutionary perspective, every human culture, when they look up at the sky and they look at the stars, they form constellations, they form stories, and they form pictures. That is innately human. As well as...
Well, how can you say that? You don't know.
Let me finish.
Okay, go ahead.
The religious impulse is innately human. When Russia became an atheistic state, what did they do? They instantaneously replaced the divine with the state. Human beings have to struggle with what they're going to do with their religious impulses. Simply insulting people who, have a religious faith. I mean, it's easy. I understand it. I can do that as well. Being able to talk to them meaningfully, it would be more effective rather than just like, I mean, being comfortable and just like tossing insults, the other side does exactly the same thing. There's a mirror image going on in the world right now in which I'm going to quote that quote again. The worst are filled with passion and intensity. The best lack all conviction. I'll let you guys go, and I'll be interested to hear what you have to say.
Well,
thank you for the call.
It seems to be addressed to me.
Yes,
kind of.
Please.
So let's, first of all, I am not a particularly tolerant person. One of the advantages of the structure we have for this show is innately, not just intellectually, but innately, Abe is sitting at the computer, Abe is checking facts, Abe is much more reluctant than I to make grand generalizations.
Yes.
I think that's fair to say.
It's part of that working relationship with reality that we try to emphasize here on the show.
Okay, I'm going to let that go.
All right.
For the moment. I think that it's really important to understand why people like me, and we're a minority, very small minority in the United States, why people like me are tired of and not particularly sympathetic with and not interested in engaging in discussion or dialogue about the unknowable. Obviously, if you give it any thought, you can have a belief about the existence or non-existence of God, the nature of God, angels, whatever. That's perfectly legitimate. Where it crosses a specific and incredibly dangerous line which has been now crossed by the basically opportunistic Republican Party. Where it has been crossed is that it is interfering with personal lives. It is interfering with the freedom of individuals. It is going well beyond, I believe, for every drop of rain that falls, a flower grows. And because I believe that that has happened, I am less tolerant, and I am not willing to engage in lengthy dialogues on the unknowable. But I will assert a position that I think is reasonable.
All right.
So, but I think the criticism is perfectly valid. On the other hand, you hardly ever hear the kind of stuff you hear here on KABU from any major media outlet.
That's true. We're just that weird.
We're so weird.
All right, let's go to Francis. Francis, good morning.
Good morning.
What's on your mind?
Oh, lots of stuff.
Good.
Your discussion today, I don't know where to begin exactly, but when you were speaking of what's happening all over the world, there are people who are, for example, in Munich, there were thousands of people demonstrating against the war economy. Mm-hmm. And that's something, a new little twist. They're finally starting to get it to the point where it needs to be. And we could also argue that we need to oppose the imprisonment economy, a neo-oppressive economy. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to speak more, you know, the great mystery, whatever it is that we are all living in existence together with. Mm-hmm.
Well, that I can certainly agree with. It's certainly a mystery.
Reunites us to where this notion of an enemy to me is becoming kind of ludicrous. It's not very logical. It's like we're constantly trying to find who our enemy is. That seems sort of a waste of time. I had this discussion with my young nephew, who is actually he's a graduate of Fordham and studied in South Africa and is about to get his PhD either at Columbia or Harvard. But we were talking about how people should not have to be in the streets demanding protections that the United States professes to already provide. And these people who are calling themselves our leaders keep saying they are preserving our freedom. Then if that's the case, people shouldn't have to be in the streets demanding their freedom. He told me about a book which I'm looking forward to reading. It's called Jewish and Anti-Semite. It was by John Paul Sartre.
Oh, yes. I've read that. Excellent.
And there's this whole discussion in the media about sides in an argument, like the left and the right. However, someone's dignity as a human being is a given, and there is no argument. There should not be an argument. It's not a matter of opinion whether someone's dignity as a human, as a living person, is real or not.
Absolutely. I'm glad you mentioned
that. So when we keep having these left and right discussions, to me, it's like putting the value of a human being in one side or the other. And there is no side. There should not be a side. And hopefully we'll get to that point where just, you know, the manner in which people are being treated right now is wrong. It's not a matter of debate. It's wrong. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense, Francis. Right. And as always, we appreciate your input on the show.
I'm looking forward to reading that book.
All right. Thanks for the call.
If you read it in French, you'll find it very interesting.
Oh, really? Well,
I'm just being a wise ass. Francis, don't respond to that.
No, but I like when I read something that validates what I've been thinking. So I'm hoping that's what it does.
I'm not sure it does, but okay.
Oh, well, I'll see. Okay.
Hey, thanks for the call, Francis. Now, I'm really glad that Francis called, and I'm glad she took the tack that she did, because that leads me to the theme I've been wanting to hit since the start of the show, which is, why should we care that this is happening? Why should we care that that ICE is using a broadened definition of who constitutes a priority pickup target. Why should we care that non-criminals are being scooped up along with criminal undocumented people? And forgive me for this use of the terminology. I'm kind of struggling for the right way to talk about this. So apologies in advance. But what Francis said is right on the money. We're talking about the fundamental dignity of every human being. Every person in the United States, regardless if they're documented or not, regardless of whether they were born here or not, regardless of whether they live here or they're just visiting, all of them are entitled to due process of law and to equal representation under the law. It is unconstitutional for someone to be snatched off the street and detained without being charged with a crime, without being allowed access to counsel. And right now, we simply don't know what is happening to these people who are scooped up in ICE raids. We don't know how long they're detained. We don't know how long it takes for them to be charged with a crime. We don't know if they're being allowed access to counsel. We simply don't know. And I want to give a shout out right now to a listener, Greta, who tipped us off on the Facebook page. And I should mention, if you'd like to get in contact with us by writing, you can do that on Facebook, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, or on Twitter at HonestAbe72. Greta sent us a link to an article in the East Bay Express, which is the east side of the San Francisco Bay Area. A reporter named Darwin Bond Graham has been hanging out in federal immigration court, observing the process. He was recently asked to leave a courtroom, not by the judge, but by an ICE attorney who did not want a reporter there present observing the proceedings.
Wait a minute, it's a court. Doesn't it have to be public? A whole thing about public trial, isn't that a thing?
Yeah, I believe that is a thing. But nevertheless, this reporter was asked to leave by the ICE attorney. The judge initially refused. Then the attorney asked the judge for a delay because, quote, I want to take care of this situation with this gentleman first. So this is happening.
Well, yeah, it's happening, and it's happening in Congress. Congress people are being shut out of meetings with immigration people. And that's been happening in the last week or so.
Yeah, it's true.
I mean, it's creepy, and it's weird, and it's fascist.
It is. You're absolutely right.
And I really want to assert one thing, which is a little bit of a sidebar, as they say in the legal system, but is nevertheless relevant. From my point of view, there are many things that one needs to look at to understand a political or social or economic situation. One of the prime ones is something called a class analysis. It doesn't mean that you only look at where one is born, what's one's advantages or disadvantages, what your status is relative to others in the society, but it does allow you to cut through a lot of other stuff. And one of the first questions, using any kind of good analysis and a class analysis, is to ask who benefits, which is ancient Roman language. Who benefits? When you talk about anything in the political universe, you need to see who gets harmed and who gets helped and who is untouched. And the fact of the matter is, what's happening right now is a coup. From that point of view, it is a coup which is going to create an almost virtual impossibility of a left-wing resistance or change order in the society as a whole. We will end up being a democracy in the sense we get to vote for Tweedledum or Tweedledee, but in reality, the differences politically will become, as they were back in the 50s, minuscule, and the consequence of that will be a loss of democracy.
Coming up this morning on
KBOO. I thought
KBOO.
I said that rather well.
Yeah, I thought you did too.
Yeah.
It's just depressing.
Yeah.
Coming
just
up this
depressing.
Morning on KBOO.
Okay. No more depressing. A war is over if you want it.
Okay, sorry.
At 9 on Alternative Radio, Georgetown Sociology Professor Michael Eric Dyson unpacks white privilege. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11 on stage and studio, D.B. Roberts welcomes Bag and Baggage Productions and the Northwest premiere of Bronte. And at 11:30, Art Focus speaks to Beresford Booth that's a great name, Beresford Booth.
I wish I had a great name.
Sounds like an Old West
criminal. I want anything, yeah, right.
Like the bad guy in a Western.
Trash Draw McGraw.
That's right. Art Focus speaks to Beresford Booth from the Portland Art Museum about the current exhibition, Constructing Identity. All this and more coming up today on your listener-supported radio station, KBOO. Now, before we go to the phones.
Yes, which we will shortly.
We will. I want to point out that we're seeing what's clearly a demonstration of Trump's much articulated intent to round up everybody who's here illegally, all 10 or 11 million of them, and forcibly deport them in short order.
Well, and he doesn't have to do it to all of them, just a significant number that makes a symbolic statement.
I don't know if his base will be satisfied with that, but we're going to be able to tell, I think, in the days to come. I think right now, ironically, we're being saved by the fact that the Trump administration is apparently just about as chaotic and disorganized as a newly ensconced administration could possibly be. Their act is so far from being together that I don't think we've seen his immigration and deportation plan in full effect for a lot of reasons, one of which is there simply aren't the resources to do it right now. So once they manage to get their act together to the extent that they're able to submit a budget, that's when we need to start paying very close attention. How much money is Trump going to ask for to round up people and send them back from whence they came? I don't know. Presumably, to deport 11 million people, you're going to need more officers, right? You're going to need more detention centers, probably something like temporary camps, I'm guessing, if you want to do this on the cheap. You're going to need more trucks. You're going to need a lot more of everything.
Hey, but trucks, you know, that's jobs.
Right. That's, yeah, sign on to President Trump's jobs program.
Well, but that's, I'm not saying that just to be funny. I'm saying that because that is the way in which Hitler was, and Mussolini, were extremely successful in gaining the support of working people. I mean, it's really important to understand that you can create a system that provides employment and a whole bunch of benefits, including health care, for example, in a fascist state. The key factor is always that people do not have freedom in that context. And exactly. Most Americans are put in a situation anyway where they don't know what the hell's going on. Not their fault, but definitely a consequence of the limits of our press, which are owned by certain people and are very much about making money. I mean, one of the reasons why Trump got as far as he did was because he was entertaining. All of the news organizations, particularly the ones that he attacked, benefited in numbers of listeners because of his attacks.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. another component of a fascist state is a lack of transparency. And right now we're seeing that with Immigration and Customs Enforcement. They really have not been yet able to tell Congress what they're doing, why, and how. This is a problem. There was a meeting last night between ICE officials and the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, which was first canceled, then rescheduled. And then Representative Joaquin Castro of Texas, after the meeting, tweeted, "After attending the ICE meeting, it's hard not to conclude that President Trump has started his mass deportation plan." The Associated Press also reports that they got their hands on a draft memo developed by the Department of Health or Department of DHS, Department of Homeland Security, not the Department of Health and Human Services.
Yeah, please.
Department of Homeland Security, which called for mobilizing up to 100,000 National Guard troops in 11 states to aid with the deportation effort. Now, I must stress that this was a draft memo from which the DHS has subsequently distanced itself. They're saying that it was never planned to be implemented. It was just part of a draft memo. These are people spitballing ideas. But I think it's noteworthy that one of the ideas that was spitballed was mobilizing 100,000 National Guard troops.
What's spitballing?
Spitballing, it describes a process of just throwing ideas at the wall and seeing
if they stick.
Right.
Well, so, I have some fecal matter I'd be glad to share.
Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For the wall.
So, yeah. So this is out there. This is out there. I talked just a moment ago about how telling Trump's initial budget is going to be in terms of all this. But we know that they're at least thinking about enlisting the National Guard to help with this mass deportation effort.
Yeah, you know, you raise an interesting point here. Is it necessary in this modern age to actually carry out a genocidal policy or semi-genocidal, if you will, attacking persons of Hispanic origin? Or does it just take a representative sample of such people to create fear and havoc and a withdrawal from participation by people who can be conceivably in danger?
I think the answer is it takes just a representative sample because, and I really believe this, the fear is the point.
I think I agree with you. I'm hoping, this is very ironic, but I'm hoping it's just symbolic, which is what we're suggesting, rather than, in fact, a genocidal policy.
Fear is the point. Another characteristic of a fascist regime.
Yeah, but remember that in Germany, it wasn't about fear. It was about an assumption of race and the linkage of assumption that linking race to power is valid.
Right. It also rooted in fear. But
oh yeah,
we digress. Let's go to the phones. We've got Karen. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I wanted to bring up some points about why we should enlist our sympathy and our action on behalf of immigrant undocumented folks. I agree with Francis that every human being has the right to dignity and respect. There are some specific historical reasons as well for us to see undocumented workers as uniquely in some ways exploited and oppressed and as scapegoats for U.S. foreign policy and for U.S. corporate policy. And I wanted to say something about our history of supporting dictators with devastating results in a number of countries, including Nicaragua, Guatemala, El Salvador, and that we supported d'Aubuisson, the head of the death squads in El Salvador, with our CIA training the death squads, and that there are something like 1.5 million Salvadorans now in the United States. Now, why is that? According to my Migration Policy Institute, an estimated more than 25% of El Salvador's population migrated or fled during the country's civil war. And I was just saying, we took the wrong side in that civil war, as we do so often in the world. So we have what is called a harvest of refugees from our policies. Also our corporate policies, for example, Monsanto flooded Mexico with cheap grain, driving out 2 million farmers from being able to grow corn. And I got the 2 million figure from Mint Press News, but I've seen it elsewhere, like The Nation as well, The Nation magazine. And so we also, as consumers, benefit from the exploitation of migrant workers. Of course, the very low wages that are paid to migrant farm workers, from the cleaning and rebuilding of New Orleans after Katrina, which is something that Aviva Chomsky cites in her book Undocumented, how immigration became illegal, labor in meatpacking, landscaping, and so on. And I just feel that in some ways, there are analogies with the African-American situation. We actually owe reparations to these people. So we're scapegoating them. And I see that very clearly. And I also have been taking some refuge in the idea that, okay, since there's a lot of economic gain from exploiting migrant labor, undocumented, we might be able to get away from the mass deportations that have been promised. But Bob Goodlatte, who's the head of the House, Justice, I think that their Justice Department told...
The Judiciary Committee?
Pardon?
The Judiciary Committee?
That's it, Judiciary. Said in Joaquin Castro's hearing, I heard Joaquin Castro say this, that they want to get rid of all the migrants. Now, maybe that's the fear factor you guys were talking about, but I was taking some refuge in the idea that, okay, they will have a symbolic jettison of these human beings who will go back to no work, no place to live, and in some places, extreme violence. But I just don't know. We've got Bannon, and he is a real racist, and the neo-Nazi, I think. So that's it. That's what I wanted to contribute.
I think it was a lot of good points, and you cited a lot of good sources, so I thank you very much.
Yeah, absolutely. This is I'm talking about the ICE detentions and
let's get back to
deportations here.
It's my fault. We went into broader territory. I admit that. But I'm not unhappy, so there.
This has got me worried. It had me worried, actually, even under the Obama administration. Anytime, as we talked about a few minutes ago on the show, anytime the basic rights of human beings are jeopardized through a program like this, it rebounds upon all of us. We all pay a price existentially, I believe. Now, I'm starting to sound a little bit like you, Joe.
Yeah, we better watch
it. Arguing the unknowable.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. A threat to justice, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice anywhere, to paraphrase Dr. King. So the fact that this is happening in this country is not only an affront to those of us who actually cherish the ideals expressed in the Declaration of Independence, for example.
I just want to say one quick thing. That line by King is also the motto of the IWW.
Is it?
Yeah.
I did not know that.
It's a true fact.
That's an interesting conjunction right there. So this is a problem, and we should all be frightened by this. We should all be embarrassed and ashamed about this, and we should all push back on it, as we should virtually everything this administration tries to do.
Well, I think that what has happened in American politics is a horrible irony. It has never been the case that we, ever since, I would say, Truman, that we actually had a popular liberal or even social democratic party in the Democratic Party. But by the time somebody like Clinton came along, certain signs were clear. Clinton was part of a group, and it isn't just Clinton, it's many politicians of more recent ilk, who changed the definition of the class to be served by the Democratic Party from the working class, which with its symbolic relationship with organized labor and the downtrodden and so on, changed it from that to the middle class. And a kind of defensive posture, the Democrats are all about preserving and saving the middle class, which was a nice setup for the paranoid image that many people have embraced under the rhetoric of the current president.
Let's go to the phones.
Okay.
Who's next? Aaron, good morning.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'll be brief. This is kind of personal to me. When I was a kid, 21, 22, I worked in law enforcement down in Texas, and this has been happening at a micro level for a long time. I worked in a town called Rosenberg, where I kind of grew up, and I worked after the military, as a city detention officer. And so on Friday nights, we would go to the Latino, the Mexican part of the community, and we'd round up immigrants, Mexican people for public intoxication. Now, they're in a bar, but we'd arrest them for PI, public intoxication. Mm-hmm. Even though we never went into the white bars or even and did stuff like this. So we'd arrest them, and then they'd go to jail on a Friday night. And then, of course, Saturday morning, the judge would come in and adjudicate them. And I realized after being there, I worked there for about 2 years, that the city itself was making about $20,000 a month just on that, because many of these men had cash on them, or women. They would have cash, so they would pay their $300 fine, and now you can get out of jail.
City
was churning out money from taking advantage of these people. We also had a Mexican-American police chief who, and this is something that I think we talk enough about, he hated immigrants because he was born in America, but he hated those other people that came here. He called them, there's this W word that they use. And it showed me that there's the Latino population, and I saw this specifically in Texas, was really fractured. I would arrest these guys, and for minor things, like if there was something like a misdemeanor, they would just pay their fine, get out of jail. But if they had a felony, they would, and a felony offense doesn't mean it was a violent offense. It could be anything that they decided to charge them with. I would take them to the county facility, and there'd be a blue bus there, and they would get about 20 or 30 of them, and they would for them to the ICE facility down in Brownsville, Texas. And what I noticed there is that for many of these small towns, like, and Brownsville is not a small town, but there are smaller towns on the border like Eloy in Arizona. These towns were making making tons of money with these private immigration detention facilities. But this has been going on since, I would say, like, this is about 20 years ago. I'm not that old. So this has been going on for a while. A town with the population of about 17,000, you know, about 2,000 members of the population were working at these facilities and making money. And I think the numbers say that these facilities are bringing in about $700 million in 2005 to nearly $2 billion in 2014. So this is also, I'm glad that Joe brought up the economic portion of this, because these people are being taken advantage of. And but this has been going on, like I said, at a micro level for a long time. And I've seen it, like I said, I was personally involved with it, to see people be taken advantage of, you know, arrested for charges such as public intoxication when you're in a bar. It was other, even more minor offenses, but to see them be transferred. And like I said, a lot of these people had cash. They would have cash on them. And I would also see officers take advantage of them. Basically, if they were arrested, I worked in the evening shift. I'd come back in the morning, and then their cash would be missing. And I'm just like, this is really, I didn't stay there too long, because I just couldn't, you know, it was a stressful job, and working in that environment is quite stressful, but it's also very, it was wrong. You know,
it sounds like extortion. It sounds like extortion. And it sounds like, and just plain old theft.
Yeah. I want to add one thing. I'm really glad you called with that information and with your experience. I want to add one thing here that's really important. Right now, in many parts of the country, it used to be true, and I don't know that it is anymore in Eastern Oregon, speed traps, police officers stopping out-of-town cars for the most minor of infractions, all of these things result in fines, which in turn enrich the local governing bodies and the agencies that service those bodies. This is a way of gaining revenue rather than making a fine. And it goes on all over the country, and it is particularly noticeable in the South and the Midwest. It doesn't mean it doesn't occur here or elsewhere. But thank you for the call, man. It's really important that you come forward with what you know, because we don't all know the same stuff.
Anything else you want to add before you sign off? We lost him already. Okay. Hey, thanks very much. Great call.
No, it's a good call. Really important.
All right, who's next? Micah, good morning.
Good morning. Hey, great show. Thanks for everything you guys do. I've been thinking about this.
You're breaking up a little bit.
What are the legal grounds for impeachment due to mental health?
Oh, that's a good idea.
That is a good question. I don't know that there are legal grounds for impeachment based on mental health.
No, there's something.
I know. I'm going to get there.
Okay.
Impeachment is reserved for what the Constitution calls high crimes and misdemeanors, and being crazy is not one of those. But there is something called the 25th Amendment, by which the vice president and some others can determine themselves and attest themselves that the president is not fit to hold his office and essentially remove him.
Like if he's making up stuff that isn't true.
Well, that would be
makes claims out of thin air.
Well, that would be decided by the vice president, who would ask for a vote of the cabinet, which could then essentially disengage the president from his powers. Now, that happened because the original problem of incapacity of the president of the United States had not been resolved in modern terms. That is, there really was no process for craziness or examination of people for craziness and so on in the original signers' rules. But it also requires that if there's a tie or a challenge of this thing, that it eventually go to the Congress as a whole. So there is a remedy. Whether or not the people who are in the cabinet of Trump alternately, whether or not there is enough interest in this issue because things get too scary, well, we don't know. We don't know. We do know that the Republican Party, in its behavior right now, is simply overjoyed to have this fascist clown as president of the United States. And we don't, I don't think many of these Republicans are as crazy as Trump, but yet they're holding the guy up. So, yeah, there is a way to get rid of the 25th Amendment. And yes, it ought to be applied.
Yeah, absolutely. We need to push that more and more. It's obvious. I mean, these things he says, he doesn't have a grasp on reality.
No.
And you can't have a person in charge of the entire nation that doesn't have a grasp on reality.
Well, yeah, evidently you can.
You might disagree with their politics, but they're certifiably insane. You know, that's just not, we need to really push that.
I agree, man.
We need to go after him psychologically and use a psychological mental health argument and, I mean, use psyops on him and his ministry, and because they are true, they're certifiably insane.
Do you think we ought to call him
reality all the time?
Do you think we should call him, rather than I call him the clown fascist, should we call him the crazy fascist?
No, you need to use a more clinical word than crazy. They don't like using the word crazy. You need to say mentally unhealthy.
Imbalanced, perhaps.
Imbalanced.
What is that called when you don't accept reality? Insane?
Mad as a hatter, I think is the technical term for it.
We need to use the insanity plea against him. It's certifiably insane. You know, he doesn't accept climate change, just makes up events happening in Sweden, just makes it
right.
Well, he's a guy who believes Fox News. What are you going to do?
Yeah, there you go.
Or even worse, he believes these theological fundamentalists that, you know, they're not even in reality at all.
Well, I think it's hard to separate Trump's fantastic life that he presents to the public with what he believes. I think what he believes is if I build a building or if I can get my name on a building, I make a lot of money. And that's about as far as his intellectual skills go, really.
Hey, listen.
That's a whole nother grounds for impeachment is all his conflicts of interest. He seems more interested in his business.
Those are actually grounds for impeachment. But hey, listen, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Push all that stuff as much as possible and stop being so nice. We need to bring out the pitchforks. They've crossed the line.
No one has ever accused me before of being too nice.
Thank you for the call very much. A couple things I want to say on that.
Sure.
You know, we toss around words like crazy or mentally imbalanced or insane and all. We're not doing anybody a service, least of all ourselves, by diagnosing the president from afar. You know, whether or not he clinically meets the definition of one or more mental deficiencies, for lack of a better term, we don't know, and we won't know until he is diagnosed by somebody up close and personal. And that information is, of course, privileged.
And I want to add that I don't trust the psychiatric community either.
Okay, well, that's a story for another time. While we throw this around in the pursuit of rhetoric, let's remember that it's not accurate, and it really doesn't help anybody to make these sort of armchair diagnoses from a distance.
You mean, right? I can't call him the clown fascist anymore?
You can, yeah.
I'm going to keep calling him.
Now, the 25th Amendment is really interesting.
Why don't you read it to us?
Well, I won't, because it's very wordy and dense, but I'm going to sum up. Okay, so basically, if the vice president and a majority of the cabinet decide that the president is unable to discharge his duties, they have to write a letter and submit it to Congress saying the president's unable to do it, at which point the vice president immediately assumes the powers of the presidency and becomes the acting president. But the president can turn around and write a letter to Congress saying, no, I'm fine. Everything's fine here. And then he's back on the job. But then the vice president and a majority of cabinet can write another letter again saying, oh, no, you're not okay. You can't do the job. And then again, the vice president immediately becomes the acting president. If the president contests this again, then the matter is thrown to the Congress to decide. So there's, you know, the way this is written, it sets the table for a coup, really.
Well, that is a problem with it, for sure.
Because all that has to happen is a group of people says, no, we don't like him anymore. He can't do his job. And then there's this back and forth, and then the Congress votes.
Well, just in this fantasy world we're talking about, remember that the vice president is Pence.
Yes. And he is awful. He's awful.
He's competent, though. He's competent.
Well, that's debatable. But he's at least predictable. As Dan Savage observes, Pence is awful, yes, but he oscillates within a predictable band of Republican awfulness.
True.
Okay.
That.
You don't have to worry when you get up in the morning. Is this going to be the day that the president decides to nuke somebody?
That's actually an important point.
It's a very important point. It's the unpredictability of President Trump that's a huge problem, and that's causing a feeling of insecurity and existential dread all over the world, because you just don't know what the guy's going to do or say.
Which I think is perfectly reasonable fear.
Yeah. As the caller mentioned, he saw on he saw on Fox News a story about Sweden's immigration policies and concluded that there had been a terror event in Sweden that he went and talked about at a public event.
Right. And there was nothing like that even on Fox News.
Not even close. He's unpredictable, to say the least.
Well, I think he's a cuckoo guy.
Yes, in your non-medical, non-professional opinion.
I once worked in a psychiatric hospital.
Okay, you weren't a guest?
I was not a guest. I was an employee. Though I would say, I only lasted there less than a year. They thought I didn't have the right attitude. The fact of the matter is that it was impossible for me, in just closing my eyes and listening to the therapy, so-called events and so on, to see that there was any real difference, except stress levels, between the inmates, because they were, and the help.
Huh.
No, really.
There's a metaphor in there somewhere, I'm sure.
Well, you know.
All right, let's take one more call before the end. Charlotte, very quickly, please. Oh, we lost Charlotte.
No, I'm here.
Oh, you're there.
I'm here.
I heard a dial tone and thought you were gone. Please, continue.
Okay. Information that we all need to know and be aware of. Last week on Thursday, Earl Blumenauer was interviewed, and he stated that the 25th Amendment is being looked into. There is a group that's forming who are going to follow through on this. So this is a real possibility that we have someone back there still paying attention to what is best for people, and as Francis said, for the dignity of us all.
Thank you for that information. I didn't know that Earl was up to it.
Yes, it should be online.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Bye.
Whoa, right. That's a kind of an interesting show, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Should we grade ourselves?
Interesting times. Interesting.
Whoa!
All right, well, thanks everybody for tuning in. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program on KBOO 90.7 FM, simply the best radio station in town.
Yeah, and good music, too.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens.